Hi, everyone. It's Shelley G. And I have got the great pleasure of having Ember Swift on the line. She's calling from her home in Beijing. And we are going to be talking about all kinds of things, including her most recent album that she's released called 1111. Ember, hi. How are you doing?
I'm great.
Thanks for calling. I wanted to talk a little bit about your album, 1111. Now, that's actually the release date of it.
That's right, yeah. November 11th, 2011. So it's just come out.
Is there any other significance to those numbers, or is it just the release date?
Yeah, for me, it was quite a significant time. This is my 11th album, mm-hmm. and of course, I released it in the year 2011. So just by extension, I decided to release it on November 11th. Mm-hmm. But also, it's numbers that I have felt a kinship with my whole life. I always see that time on the clock. I always think of it as a lucky time to look up and make a wish. And I thought, well, this is a really important year for me, so why not name it after the auspicious clock time?
You live in Beijing.
I do, yeah.
Why did you move there?
I had always wanted to go to China, and I have a degree in East Asian Studies. And I just always dreamed of eventually going to China and making use of my education and seeing what it was like over here. So in 2007, I took a break from my busy touring career, came to China, and loved it. Thought this was just such an amazing, inspiring city, and felt that I really had something more to learn here. So in 2007, later on, I went back, and the second time I went to China, I found love with my current partner, and mm-hmm. now, you know, love changes everything when it comes to your life direction. Mm-hmm. I decided to move here.
When you were involved in Asian studies in school, did you have a certain preconception of what China would be?
That's a great question. I certainly had the idea that China would be vast and would seem like it was, you know, everywhere you were elbow to elbow with people, because I certainly knew about the amazing population here.
Right.
But when I came to China, I realized that, like Canada, it is geographically vast, but that doesn't mean there aren't open spaces and that there's not room to breathe here. So that was something that surprised me, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And as well, the notion of China is really steeped in tradition and it's such a rich history. So when I came to China, I was surprised at how modern the country has become. Mm. You know, we just have all these images of an ancient China, and that is still present here, but it's surrounded by big, tall glass buildings. The city of Beijing is a super modern city. So a lot of times people assume that they're going to walk right into the old vision of China, but yeah. That's not the word anymore.
When you moved to Beijing, did you get involved, you know, with the expat community? Did you live in an expat community, or how did that work for you?
When I first came to Beijing, I met nobody here. Only people that I had been connected to through email and my email list from my fans. So I had, you know, friends of friends who I connected with. They were all expats. Mm-hmm. From various countries, the U.S., Canada, Europe. They didn't know me, and I didn't know them, but they knew of me, my fans. Or one woman had been to one of my shows, but I hadn't met her before. And they all introduced me to a side of Beijing that, of course, I wouldn't have been introduced to had I not known them. And that was the expat community. But very quickly, I met and became friends with many people in the Chinese community. Mm-hmm. So just that view of the city, it was a really broad view of the city.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ontario. I lived in Ontario, actually, my whole life, with the exception of a brief stint in Quebec. But I was born in Burlington, Ontario, just outside of Toronto. I think of Toronto as my hometown, really.
Can you tell me, when you were little, was there music in the home? What did you hear?
A lot of music.
Yeah.
My both grandparents were performers and musicians. My mother is a great singer and always sang in a choir and also did some songwriting. My grandmother as well, on my mother's side, is a songwriter. So there was always music in the house, and I started studying piano when I was 9. There was also classical music happening on a, you know, on a more formal level.
Mm-hmm. What did you like to listen to as a youngster?
Well, I listened to a lot of radio when I was growing up.
Did you?
But
yeah.
But I got a lot of pop music and the music of the day. But then as a young teenager, I got into folk music and started to attend folk festivals. And I found out about that side of the music world, this sort of unknown folk artist, which inspired me to pick up the guitar when I was about 16. And, you know, planted the seed for a dream to be a folk artist, to perform at a folk festival myself. Which, of course, I achieved over time.
Do you have any other creative outlets, you know, like painting or stuff like that?
Well, I like to draw, but I've never been a person who's used visual art as my outlet. Mm-hmm. But I do like to draw occasionally. I love to write, so I've been a writer my whole life as well. Mm. And in the last few years, I've been doing more of that and have been publishing a few magazines, and I've kept some steady blogs, and I'm really enjoying the pleasure of writing it out. Mm. I have a dream in the future of publishing my own works, which would be nice. That's a dream.
When you say publishing your work, essays, short stories, poetry, or all of the above?
Well, I have done a lot of article writing as a, you know, as a reporter.
Right.
So I have already been published in that way. But I have a dream of writing a novel.
Oh, my. That's ambitious.
You know, it is ambitious. Who knows? It might take me 20 years. Maybe one day I'll publish a novel.
Yeah, well, you know, it seems to me you've been living a rather extraordinary life. I don't think a novel would be entirely out of the question with you.
Well, thank you for the vote of confidence. I appreciate that.
Amber, what did you want to be when you were little, before you discovered folk music?
Well, when I was about 10, I wanted to be the prime minister.
Oh, I love it.
I studied about Johnny McDonald, and I thought, you know, he was the first prime minister, but there hasn't been a woman. Well, of course, since then, Jim Campbell stepped in briefly. And I wanted to be a novelist at a short time in my life, and I still want that.
Yeah.
But other than that, I didn't have, like, a set profession that I was sure I needed to be.
Yeah.
Not until I started to make music, and then I'd like to pursue this more professionally. But that came when I was a bit older.
Right. You know, I wasn't really familiar with your music or the kind of things that you did. The first thing that jumped out at me was the words queer identified.
Mm,
and
okay.
I thought, what an interesting term. Why would you use that word?
Shall I explain it?
Sure. Because I think it can be a fairly broad term. I think it might even be more like a freeing term, I would imagine. But yeah, I would like to know.
The term queer, I think that's a really great assessment of it. It is, to me, it's a liberating term. Of course, back in the day, queer was the derogatory word.
Very derogatory, yeah.
Right, that was flung at anyone who was not heteronormative. So anyone who was not heterosexual was assigned that word, anyone who was a little bit different. But I originally, when I was a late teenager, I came out as a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, I was only interested in women. As my development progressed, I realized that I was a little more open than I thought toward men. Maybe 80, to call myself an 80-20. And occasionally would be attracted to a very pretty, very feminine man.
Right.
And I thought, okay, well, you know, my sexuality is not so black and white. And then it came to my attention that the word queer had been reabsorbed by the GLBT community as a term of empowerment. So rather than it still having its power as a derogatory term, there was a new movement of people that were saying, no, we are queer identified, which means that they were saying that it was a more umbrella term that could be assigned to anyone who's not heterosexual. So someone who was gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, someone like me who felt that the term lesbian wasn't really accurate, so my 80-20, suddenly I realized there was a term that fit me, and that it would fit also, it would also fit my community of people equally.
Mm-hmm.
So I really loved the term. I found it to be just empowering, and really the inclusive side of it is what really brought me to feeling that it in me.
Mm-hmm.
So as time went on, I just used that as the term to define me in terms of sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Society is really defined by sexuality in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You get cordoned off, you know, the gay pile and the bisexual pile and the straight pile. And as an artist, I often got separated out that way. So my previous partners have all been women until my current partner, who is a man. But my queer identity has not changed. I'm still the same person.
You're still the same person.
Hmm. Yeah.
How did you meet your current partner? Are you married?
I am married. We did get married, which is certainly very helpful to my Chinese visa.
Yeah, I would imagine so. How did you meet your husband?
We met in the music community here in Beijing, and despite being such a huge city, it's a small community. It's modern music, contemporary music, I should say, is just at an early stage in terms of infrastructure here. So when I was introduced as a musician, I suddenly was in the inner circle of the live musicians that are here and working in China. And it was quite remarkable, actually, because as a musician back home, I occupy a certain level, but didn't know the famous musicians. But you come here and it's a smaller pool, so I was suddenly meeting all these rock stars. My partner was the bass player for a very famous Chinese rock star when I first moved here. Uh-huh. We'd worked with him for about 6 years. It was building his own career at that time as well with his own band. So anyway, I met this bunch of rock musicians, and I turned around and thought, wow, he is the most beautiful man I've seen. And apparently he had the same thought about me. So it's one of those really beautiful, beautiful moments of both noticing each other at the same time. So we became friends, and the next time I came back to China, I actually ran into him in the first couple days of being back in China, which I thought was fated. And so our connection just grew from there. And of course, we fell in love, and then the rest is history. We got married, and now I'm currently sitting here talking to you with my 5.5-week daughter on my body having lunch. I'm nursing, but you might have heard she's so funny when she feeds. She makes all these sounds like a little animal, snorting and huffing and puffing. And I wonder if that's coming through in the interview, the snort, snort, huff, puff.
I can hear her a little bit. And how are you doing with new baby?
Pretty well. I always wanted to be a mother, and wasn't sure if that would happen for me. But of course, everything lines up as it's supposed to. So here I am being a mom in my mid-30s, and I didn't realize how much work it is. So congratulations to all the mothers out there. Wow, she's only 5.5 weeks, and I'm still trying to figure out if I'm on this planet. I'm so tired,
I know.
But I'm so excited. It's just amazing.
I don't know. You must have some kind of energy because, I mean, being a new mom is hard enough. But being mom and also dealing with cultural differences of raising babies in different cultures and communities, I mean, that would be hard enough, too. So you've kind of got a double whammy there.
I do. Well, my husband is, as you know, he's Chinese. And when we met, his English was pretty bad, and my English was a bit better than his English. So we established our relationship in Mandarin. The first year of our relationship, there were lots of foibles because my language skills were, they had to catch up quickly. But now I feel that I had a real crash course in this culture, and now we've been together now 4 years, and we have this little one. So I think she's going to be okay. She's going to get two different cultural influences right from the beginning, and two different languages, and maybe even French, because I speak French as well. If I can include French into her repertoire, then she'll be trilingual, which would be amazing.
Oh, that would be.
And I really think even though it is a struggle to raise a child in another culture, it's such a gift to them as well. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine that there will be, well, I'm sure there will be hardships, but I think that most of what she's going to get is an advantage in life.
Mm-hmm. Did you sing to her?
Oh, yes. I was on tour with my new album for the later, almost right into my third trimester. Uh-huh. So throughout her whole gestation, she had my music going almost, well, every day on stage. So now that she's born, I sing to her regularly.
And your husband, does he sing? He's a musician, you say. Does he sing to her as well?
He's currently on tour in New Zealand, actually. He just left last week, and he's 3 weeks with his band. They're doing very well. They just won Best Album 2011 and Best Band 2011 for the Chinese Rock Awards.
Wow.
So they're really right on top of the world right now. Mm-hmm. He has a Chinese rock reggae band. It's one of the first in this country, and it's, of course, getting a lot of attention because, you know, most people have never heard of reggae music being sung in Chinese.
Right.
So, yeah, they're doing really well. And when she was born, she responded immediately to reggae music. I'm sure they heard daddy.
Wow, there are so many layers to you. I just don't know where to start, honestly. Let's talk a little bit about this album you have, 1111.
Sure. Yeah,
it has two versions, one in Mandarin, one in English. Are you fluent in Mandarin?
I am myself functionally fluent in Mandarin. It is such a complex language that I could not claim academic fluency at this point. I still have to bring out a dictionary when I'm reading the characters. There's lots of characters recognized, and my writing is probably my weakest. So being able to just recall the characters and write them down, that's a really hard step. Mm-hmm. I would like to become academically fluent in my future, but it's not my level now. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean I'm not functionally comfortable in the language. I can have a conversation about anything with anyone. Mm-hmm. And when it came to wanting to have my music in both languages, I was able to write the first couple drafts of my lyrics in Mandarin and then have them checked over and helped along by people in my life, particularly my husband, mm-hmm. who is a lyricist as well. So he looked through all my lyrics and helped me basically polish them up so that they were more accurate and, right. you know, better in terms of, because it's his native language.
Yeah.
The reason I did that and the reason that I set that as a goal for myself to have two editions of this album is that I'm performing in China and also performing in Western countries that are English-speaking.
Right.
And I realized very quickly that if I wasn't performing in the language of the land, that I was not going to have anywhere near the impact as an artist that I could have in an English-speaking country. Mm-hmm. Because to me, music is about communication. So if I stood on stage in China and sang in English, I was only reaching a very small percentage of people who had some English skills. Or else I was only reaching the expat community. Mm-hmm. And that was a very limited reach,
yeah.
to be honest. And as soon as I started singing a few more songs in Chinese, I realized that the impact of my music was increasing exponentially. So it was really important to me to take the time to build a body of work in Chinese to respect this culture. It's already had a lot more impact than my previous works have. Mm-hmm. This past year, I was on the Chinese rock charts, which apparently no other foreigner has been, which is a really nice thing. I was on the Chinese rock charts for 7 weeks with one of my songs about being a foreigner in China, which I find really ironic that no foreigner has been on the chart on the chart.
I know.
Being a foreigner.
Now, actually, you know, that's one of my favorite songs.
Oh, yeah?
La Wai.
You got it. Oh, that's exactly the right pronunciation.
Yeah.
我不只是个老外，我不是那么奇怪，只是一个人。我不是一个动物，在一个动物园，你不能总拍我的照片，除非你捡不钱，一张100块。
羊妞，你别那么拧巴，这个情况它没那么可怕。 搞得好像我们在欺负你，这不行，我得出来说两句。当然你绝不是动物，中国人也没那么糊涂，这也不是什么动物园，你缺乏尊重但不能缺乏心眼。多看你几眼是觉得你长得还行，可你不是才具，跟我们玩个性，跟你合个影你还要收费，大熊猫也没你这么金贵，人家服务员都是朴实的孩子，怕你不会用筷子想给你换叉子，微笑服务你还不知足，你不自在是心有孤独，逼我动粗。行了行了别哭了，你的感觉我们也能理解，身在异乡那点情绪也难免，可你该知道大家都没有恶意，跟你贫两句纯粹出于好奇，有些同胞以后也别那么热情，见到老外就上前说个不停，给姑娘都逼得写歌抒情，上赶着不是买卖你们忘了不成，别人拿你当老外你自己不能见外，出门在外要学会调整心态，这不是内外的问题，我们只是有些文化上的差异，不管出于什么理由来到这里，华夏儿女也从来没亏待过你，记住我们是礼仪之邦，不讲究的行为是极个别现象。
我不是一个动物，在一个动物园玩，我不是一个动物，在一个动物园玩，我不是一个动物，在一个动物园玩，我不是一个动物，在一个动物园玩，我不是一个动物，在一个动物园玩，我不是一个动物，在一个动物园玩，我不是一个动物，在一个动物园玩，我不是一个动物，在一个动物园玩，我不只是个老外，我不只是个老外，我不是那么奇怪，只是一个人，我不只是个老外，我不只是个老外，我不是那么奇怪，只是一个人。
Love the musicianship in there, the instrument. Is there a Chinese instrument in there, or are they all Western instruments?
There is one Chinese instrument in it. It's called an arfu, which is a two-stringed instrument that's played with a bow and is often considered to be the Chinese violin. Mm. It certainly has a really long history, thousands of years of history, and the woman who plays it plays a variety of Chinese instruments, but she plays the arfu in my band, and I think adds so much to the song. It's sort of a high-pitched stringed instrument that you hear coming in the choruses.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. You know, I'm not familiar with Chinese instruments. The only one I ever can really recall hearing was something called a pipa.
Mm, yeah, that's like a stringed guitar.
Yeah, like a lute or something.
It's a fluttery motion.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful sound.
On your album, I don't know, you know, it sounds, these songs are so almost old-fashioned sounding, like I've Fallen in Love with You, I Wish I May. They sound very kind of old-fashioned to me, are they?
Those two are. Those two were written by my maternal grandmother in the 1940s.
Oh, and for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, she is 94 and had never published the songs, and they were part of my life growing up. And she's written a few songs in her life, not too many, but those two are two of them. And when I first came to China, I started to try my hand at singing in Chinese, and I Wish I May was the first song I translated with the help of a friend, and it's such a simple love song that it was a quick translation, and people really loved it here. So I worked on a second one of my grandmother's songs, and both of those songs were well requested by my Chinese audience. So, and they also, they were well requested by my English-speaking audience too, in English, because they added another dimension to the shows. It was this sort of insert of traditional jazz that people really liked. And so I built the arrangements with the band and, you know, wrote the guitar part and everything, and decided to record it on this record. Yeah, both of those songs are old-fashioned, but that's what I love about them.
That's what I love about them, too. That is wonderful that they are your grandma's songs. I love that.
Yeah.
What about the last song on there? I think it's called Peck. Is that how you pronounce that? Peck?
It's called Peek.
Peek.
The phonetic pronunciation, P-E-K. That one has been in my repertoire for a long time. D.C., actually. It was written in Penticton back in 1999. Mm-hmm. And that was on my second tour out west when I was first starting out as a musician. And it was back when I was dreaming about being in China. I had graduated from university and I thought, oh, I want to write a song that sort of has the sound of the East. And I'd studied some of the scales. And so I wrote that back then. And it developed with my band over the years as an instrumental piece. And I recorded it in 2000. And I recorded it again in 2004. And then it was a feature track on my DVD, my live DVD from Australia in 2005. And then when I built a band here in Beijing, the players really liked that song and wanted to develop it once more. I thought, well, you know, the song has been with me for a long time. Why not give it another layer of life? And so we introduced the Chinese instrument, the erhu, to it, which I think really, really works with it. Yeah, well, and what I realized later was that back in the day it was named peak because that embodied all three meanings of that English word peak, which, of course, is P-E-E-K, to look furtively, P-E-A-K, which is the peak of a mountain, and P-I-Q-U-E, right, which is to pique someone's interest. And And I thought, well, gosh, it does all of those things for me, so why not name it with the phonetic spelling?
Yeah.
But when I came here and built it with my Chinese band, it took a while, but one day I turned around and I realized this song was a calling to my dream for China, and it also is the acronym for the airport here in Beijing, because the airport is P-E-K, and it's a hearkening to when it used to be called Peking, this city. And I thought, wow, that's creepy. I didn't know that. So I was naming it back in the day, and now I see that it, in some ways, it was like a signpost that was pointing its way here. And now that I've put it on this album, my 11th album, I feel like it's finally got its feet. That song is as close to how I originally heard it on this album that it's ever been. It's never been closer.
Yeah. Amber, what do you want to tell people about your music and about you, Amber Swift?
Well, I have been around the music community for a long time in Canada specifically, so I imagine that some of your listeners will have heard of my name, but may never have heard my music. I think that's common in the independent music community. There are just so many of us, so many artists out there, and if anything, I would like to communicate to your audience that I think it's really important that we as listeners open our ears to all of the artists that potentially aren't on the radio, meaning the mainstream radio, and aren't on much music. I think we need to just be that much more open to the diversity that's out there. And I hope, if nothing else, that hearing some music of mine today will inspire people to open themselves to the huge pool of talent that exists in the independent music community. As an independent artist, I've been a sustainable, working, long-term artist, and I have so much gratitude to my audience for that. But there are so many more independent artists that are struggling every day to make their careers sustainable. And what it takes is an audience of open-minded listeners, music lovers, who are willing to invest the time to listen to artists that we've never heard of before. And that comes from people being active on the internet, people going and attending live music performances, people taking a risk on a festival that maybe has no artist on the bill they've ever heard of, but mm-hmm. taking a risk and going to hear it, and potentially just expanding their worlds. Who knows? Perhaps their worlds are already as expanded as they could ever be, and more expanded than mine. But I do think that most of society operates in a very narrow stream that's dictated by a mainstream media, mm-hmm. particularly the television and mainstream radio. So if anything, I hope that this interview helps to open the ears of people, not just to my music, but to music by so many independent artists out there.
Well said. Amber, what is a typical Mandarin phrase that you would say when you want to say goodbye to someone?
Well, goodbye is zai jian, and that is literally see you again, which I really like. Because in English, we can say goodbye, but we can also say see you later. Mm-hmm. But in Chinese, the word goodbye is see you later. And so I would say zai jian. I would also say xie xie, which is thank you. And I want to thank you. So, xie xie, zai jian.
You're very welcome. Interview and production by Shelley Gummison, writer for Earshot and host of Jazz on the Rocks on CFBX.